start again. And so the lectures for today have two topics. This is before the break. I want to talk about thermalization, and I will also use that to get into cluster algorithms. And then after the break, I will talk about finite size scaling, and I will make I will also have some take-home message about what I think is good for you. And I might shift the break a little bit later, because this will take more time than this. But we'll see. Okay, so yesterday I hope I convinced you that if you have detailed balance and you have ergodicity, that these are the usual main ingredients in the Monte Carlo simulation, and they make sure that you can eventually sample the Boltzmann distribution, or another distribution if you want to sample another distribution, but you can control that using these two things. So it's not necessary, but it is sufficient, and it is what you usually aim for, because it's really hard to find correct algorithms that are not based on detailed balance and ergodicity. And so I also stress that eventually you sample the Boltzmann distribution. And now the question of this morning is, how long does it take before you have reached this eventual state? And the process to reach the steady state and sampling the distribution that you want, that process is known as thermalization, and it predates the time of computers. This is more like an experimental term, that you want your equipment to be accommodated to room temperature or things like that. With computers, that's not really an issue, but we still use the word thermalization for this process, even though, well, the temperature of the computer is irrelevant. Okay, and so this is an easy question to ask, and always important, but it's really hard to answer. So that will take some time. And there are various things that one can do. The most common thing is to basically say that, well, I simulated so long, so I'm sure that this is long enough. Good referees will not accept that, because you have the burden of proof that you actually simulated long enough. And literature is full with papers that did not thermalize long enough. It can be very nasty, this thermalization process. One step better than just saying, well, I simulated so long, it must be enough, is to do the following. So basically, you concentrate on some observable that you suspect is a slowly varying observable. So you take some observable for instance, the absolute value of the magnetization. That tends to be a slow variable. The energy is usually not a good one to take for, this is one. And then what you do is you plot M versus time, computer time, or some other definition of time. In the case of the Metropolis algorithms, the typical time scale that's used is Monte Carlo steps per site. Yeah. So if you have a 40 by 40 Ising model, if you have attempted 1600 random spin flips, then you say that you covered one unit of time. The reason why you do it that way, rather than just counting how many proposed pin flips, is that you want something, whatever happens locally, the time scale should not be influenced by how big your system is, right? So you want something like that. A spin has attempted things with a certain fixed rate, irrespective of your system size. So that's why you do use something like this. And then you start from two different initial states. And one choice for the isomode would be to start in a random spin configuration and to start in an ordered one. And then if you do that, then so this is my observable M. And so then in one of them I start here. So that's the ordered state. And in the other one, I start somewhere around here, around zero, because a random state will have a small magnetization. And then you get curves like this, and then this one will go like this. And then basically you determine the first time of crossing. And certainly, before the first time of crossing, it is extremely unlikely that you are thermalized, because there still is a lot of memory. At the first time of crossing, you might have hope. But just to be sure, it's better to just take two or three times this time. And then you at least have done something reasonable. So the curves meet at t is tau, and then to be reasonably sure, thermalize over two or three tau. Yeah, so that is a very practical way of how one might do it. I mean, and there are obviously better ways and so on, but this is better than just saying, well, I spent so much time, it must be fine. And this is something that you can also easily try out with the program that you wrote yesterday.
This is an average value of single site observables, the global magnetization.
Why do you say
it's a sum?
You can always
normalize it just to give it between 0 and 1. My question is,
that doesn't matter, right?
There are other observables like the sigma I, sigma j, which thermalize on another scale.
So that's a deep question. So strictly speaking, I will come back to that later. I have to do a little bit. It'll come two pages from now, and then I can answer the question better. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. Can I ask, in a general system, what would be the equivalent for M?
I would say take an observable that you're interested in. And take one in which the initial states are quite far apart,
But you said energy wasn't good, so what's energy not good?
So typically, the system always wants to reduce energy, so the energy goes down really fast initially, And in the Ising model, you tend to, if you start with a random state, you tend to end up often with a big stripe of plus in a sea of minus or something like that. Then the energy is almost there. Almost, but the magnetization is still close to zero if the stripe is like half of the system. And so it fluctuates, so it will cross, but it will fluctuate at, let's say, epsilon higher than the other one. So that doesn't make it a very good one. Yeah, so it's good to have something that is ordered in one side and not ordered in the other or things like that. So long range order builds up slowly. But so this is, yeah. Yeah. This is a bit of craftsmanship and so on. Yeah, it's yeah. Okay. Yep.
Can't you look at the eigenvalues of the transition matrix to get an idea of?
Yeah. But so if you have a 40x40 Ising model, then there are 1600 spins, and so you have 2^1600 states, and so you have a transition matrix, and it's a sparse matrix. It's very sparse, but it's 2^1600 by 2^1600. Mm-hmm. And indeed it has eigenvalues, but you can't get them. But
it's faster to just run a simulation and see how long it takes to get to tau in practice.
Well, I mean, there are better ways of doing it, but they tend to be painful and involved. And this is not so bad, I says. I mean, it's like, from zero, it's the first step. Yeah. So these are very good questions, but it's easier for me to answer them, let's say, 15 minutes from now. So I will now go on and ignore your questions for now, for a few minutes. Okay. So the question is, I mean, how long is this correlation time typically? I mean, can you make like an estimation beforehand? And yeah, there is a heuristic argument about how long would it typically be. And so it could be that at some point, if you start with a random configuration, you end up in a state that crudely looks like this. Yeah, these are nasty states that tend to live right quite long. So if you are in a state like this, then obviously if you pick a spin here, it might actually flip with a small probability. But then in the next time you select it, it will certainly go away again. So it doesn't have any long-lasting effect. And the only places where your spin flips will have a lasting effect is actually close to this boundary. And so what's going to happen is that this boundary is going to show a diffusive behavior. Yeah, and
this direction.
Well, now diffusive means in both directions equally likely. Yeah. And so eventually this system would want to be mostly minus or plus. So this is t less than tc, but rather close. That's the easiest case to discuss. Yeah. And so if you want to have diffusion over a distance L, then you know that the typical time it takes is going to be order L squared. Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, if you, okay, I will come back to that also, yeah? I mean, so if you do the normal, I mean, you can, I mean, yeah, okay, I can say a lot about it. But let's just stick to if you do what I asked you to do yesterday, yeah?
So
then you get like that tau is going to be like the order of L squared, right? At least in this case. And so let's see, I mean, so if L would be 100, so if you have 100x100 Ising model, which is not extremely big, yeah, then tau is going to be in the order of 10^4 Monte Carlo steps per side. Yeah, and so that already means that you need, in the order of 10 to the power 8, proposed spin flips to thermalize. So just to say that, I mean, these times can be quite long. I mean, they typically are longer than you naively would estimate. Yeah?
So why L squared per side?
So the argument is that tau goes like L squared. So tau is in the order of 10 to the power 4.
But
yeah. Monte Carlo steps per side.
It's a diffusion time.
Yeah, it. I mean, if it is diffusive, then to cover a distance L takes a time of order L squared. Mathematics 101, huh? Okay, yeah, and so I mean, you might have luck and the prefactor might be 0.1 or you might have bad luck and it's 10 or so. I mean, I leave out prefactors, but just that you are prepared that this can be quite serious. Huh? I mean. So it's not very efficient, and so this is a heuristic argument at slightly below the critical temperature. It turns out actually that at the critical temperature, where you usually are mostly interested in, it is even slightly worse. And there, the typical correlation time goes like L to the power Z with Z is 2.167. We don't know the exact number. I mean, obviously, there is suspicion that it's 2 plus 1/6, but that is numerology. In two dimensions, this is, yeah? And so this is slightly more than L squared. So at the critical temperature, it seems to be even slower. And that is also known as critical slowing down. So now the thing is that what you said, well, if you know that you want to have ordered, why not have a slight field and then you get rid of it? Yeah, that's true, but at the critical temperature, you can't do that. And so. Yeah, so it solves the problem in the region where you're not interested.
Would it help for thermalization to start with a higher temperature and then gradually lower it?
So you say, does this one converge faster than this one?
No, I mean in order to figure out your the probabilities, the acceptance probabilities. Higher temperature at first, and then lower.
Yeah, no, I think if you start with the ordered state, you wouldn't have this problem. Huh? So starting in a random state usually doesn't solve your problems. Okay. Well, I mean, the problem is slightly deeper. So now, if you want to know, I mean, how Z, the critical exponent, the dynamical critical exponent is determined, usually you don't do this with the thermalization. That's not a very clean way. And Z is typically obtained from the for instance, the autocorrelation function of either M or the energy. So basically you have the, which is a function of time difference, delta T. It's the energy at T plus delta T minus the expected energy times the energy of T minus its average. And the expectation value of this. Yeah. So if you measure like E as a function of T, and you start, for instance, already at 2 tau. Yeah. So then the thermalization happens before, outside the region where I'm interested in it. Then it tends to have some behavior like this. So there is an average. So this is like E bar. And so typically, if delta T is very short, then both at T and at T plus delta T, you either are below the average or you are above the average. So you typically get a positive result. And if delta T is way longer than the correlation, then you get noise around zero. So typically, if you look at how the correlation function looks like, CE delta T as a function of delta T, then it might make sense to plot like the logarithm of this one as a function of time. And then you get something that looks like this. And so naively, you could kind of fit like a straight line and say that it goes like e to the power minus t over correlation time. Yeah. Actually, recently I found out that it doesn't go like this. It actually goes like this to the power 0.81. So it's a stretched exponential decay, etc. for the reasonable regime. And eventually it has to go down exponential. Because you are applying a huge matrix many times, and so then there are discrete eigenvalues, and there's the slowest decaying mode that has an eigenvalue, and strictly speaking, that's tau c, to come back to your question. So eventually this goes down exponential, but not over the normal time range where you can get decent statistics. But anyway, so this is a way to get like the correlation time. And you know for sure that unless you are extremely lucky, your thermalization time is not going to be shorter than the correlation time. Yeah? If you're still correlated to your initial state, you're not thermalized. So this is another way of getting an idea of that you are on the right track with your thermalization time. Is this okay? And so yeah, and so you had a question, but now yeah, did I answer it, or is it, has it been answered, or?
My personal idea is that it really depends on the observer you're interested in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So basically, so your dynamics is your dynamics is a huge matrix operation, and this matrix has its eigenvalues. Yeah, irrespective of what observable you take. And there are some observables that don't excite the slowest decaying mode. And these ones can decay faster. But all the ones that have a non-zero prefactor for the observable that you have will eventually decay exponentially with the slowest mode. Yeah? But this is more like the formal answer. Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
Can you speed this up a little bit by flipping blocks rather than single units?
I don't think anybody. Okay. The long answer is yes. Then you get to cluster algorithms, and the short answer is just going to 2x2. That's not the way to go, because you do more work per operation. Does it pay off? Typically not. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll get to that. Okay, so this is about the state of the art as it was until 1987. And so people said, okay, there is nothing we can do other than trying to make the computers as fast as possible. And this was a hobby of various groups, for instance, in Delft in the Netherlands, where they built the DICE, the Delft Ising Computing Engine, a computer that could only do one thing, and that is simulate the Ising model. Yeah? And also in Santa Barbara, they built a machine that could only do one thing, and that is simulate the Ising model. Yeah? The Ising model actually is quite important in physics, so yeah. These projects had quite a mixed result. In Delft, they found out that the random number generator wasn't good enough, and so the results they got were not correct. And in Santa Barbara, they planned it to build it in 2 years, and it lasted 5 years. And then in the meantime, there was a big breakthrough. And so suddenly, there were a couple of very smart people, Svensson and Wang, that invented an algorithm that was vastly superior to this. So since 1987, and that's the year that Svensson and Wang came with their important paper in this area, we can avoid such critical slowing down. And so basically they proposed something that it was called a cluster algorithm. And now the thing is that they did the big breakthrough, etc. But 2 years later, there was one German guy who found a small improvement on their algorithm. And so the algorithm that everybody uses is called after him, rather than after Svensson Wang. And so I will present you the algorithm due to Uri Wolf. And he should get credit for that. But the big credit should go to Svensson and Wang, I think. So let me describe the Wolf algorithm. That was actually proposed in 1989. And so basically what it does is, the first step is that you select a random site. This sounds familiar, huh? And now what I add is that this is the seed of a cluster C, but this is my terminology. But the first step is just you randomly pick a site. And then the next step in this algorithm is that you consider all links. So these are the links to neighbors, huh? But you only consider links of a site X, which is in the cluster, to a site Y, which is not in the cluster. And you only consider every link once. And then what you do is that you actually activate these links with a certain probability. And the activation probability is 1 minus e to the power minus 2 beta j. If the spins are equal, and if the spins are not equal, you never activate the link. And this is an iterative process, because then if you activate a link, you add a site to the cluster, but then there are new links that you have to consider again, because they are not considered yet. And then, so if link XY is activated, add Y to C. And then this is an iterative process, huh? Because once you add a site to the cluster, then there are new links that you have to consider. And at the end, you flip all spins in C. And this is one step. And so now let me go through this a little bit graphically to make to make it more alive for you, more vivid. So suppose that you are in this configuration. Then the first step is you randomly pick a site. So that could be this one. So now my cluster consists of this site only. But now I have to look at, I have four links that I did not consider yet. Yeah? And I have to consider all of them. So suppose I look at this link. Yeah? What is the probability that I activate this link? Zero, yeah, because the spins are not the same. So I will certainly not activate this link. But this one might be added with a probability of, let's say, 0.43 or so, depending on what beta times k is. So now suppose there's also a chance I don't activate it, yeah? And I might not activate it, but I might activate this one, yeah? And now my cluster looks like this, yeah? But now there are three more links that I have to look at. Well, this one certainly will not be activated. This one might be activated, and this one might not be activated. And then this cluster could grow like this, and then I might just reject them. And so then this is my cluster. Yeah. And then after this move, the final step is that all these spins are flipped. And they all have to be the same spins, of course. I mean, all these spins are aligned in the cluster because I never add an anti-aligned spin. So, but now in one move, I have just taken out this whole cluster and flipped it. So that's the algorithm. No, yeah?
When do you stop with the process that activates the links?
Well, I mean, at some point there are no links anymore that I did not consider, okay. And then I'm done. Okay. Yeah. So it, yeah.
You do not reconsider previous links again?
No, because I only consider links that have not been considered before. Yeah? I might reconsider a spin if I come to it from different directions. Yeah? But I don't consider links twice. Yeah?
Is that a replacement of the Metropolis algorithm?
Yeah. Yeah.
But something is also always changed in every step. At least the seed.
Yeah, yeah, you always flip a cluster, yeah. Yeah. Yeah?
This might be beyond the scope of your talk, but are we going to see a mathematical proof?
Yeah, that will come if, I want to prove it, yeah.
Is there a physical justification for
No, that? Let's do the mathematical one, and I prefer that, yeah. Okay, so now if you go back to this state, yeah, if you would use this cluster algorithm, then the correlation time is going to be order one, right? Because chances are that you just fill this whole thing, leaving a bit of holes behind. You just flip it, and you're done in one step, rather than in 10 to the power 8 attempted spin flips. So you see that there are cases where this algorithm is a good idea. And it might introduce new problems, but that's something else. Yeah. So is the algorithm clear to everybody? And you see that it might actually, it has potential. Huh? It might solve a problem. Okay. Now obviously, as any Monte Carlo algorithms, you have the burden to show detailed balance and ergodicity in order to know that it is correct. And so that is going to be the next part. So ergodicity is actually rather easy because there is always a chance that you don't activate anything. No? And so you can just flip a single spin. That's part of the algorithm. Yeah, I'm not discussing zero temperature or something like that. That's not interesting. And so if you have two different configurations, you could just flip all the different spins one by one and so then get from any A to any B. So ergodicity is easy in this algorithm. And now the hard part is detailed balance. Yeah?
What is the criterion of the P?
This is the criterion. It is 1 minus e to the power minus 2 beta j. Yeah, if you don't take this choice, you don't get the correct sampling. But, I mean, obviously, it's not that they invented this and decided to try it out. Huh?
Do you need to be the balance? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll come. So there is a cleaner derivation in the notes that you received, and so I will do the less clean version of it, but that still is the right spirit. So detailed balance is that the for every tool configurations A and B, the probability, so the Boltzmann probability, because that's what you want, to be in A, times the proposition probability to go from A to B, times the acceptance probability of that move, is equal to PB times that you propose to go from B to A and accept it. Yeah, this is a recollection of yesterday. So that's what we have to prove. Now, in the previous case, in the Metropolis, these proposition probabilities were rather boring. They were just 1 over L squared. Yeah? So all the hard work was in acceptance. In this case, it just simply says you flip all spins. Right? So there is no choice. The acceptance rate is always 100%. Yeah? So here, the big burden is to find out what is this proposition rate. So here, AAB is A, BA is equal to 100%, because you always accept anything. And so now I have the burden to show, okay, what is this proposition probability? So if I am in a state A and I want to propose to go to a certain state B, then obviously A and B have to be different in a single cluster. Yeah, because I never propose to flip two clusters. Yeah, so it's a single cluster that's different. And the seed should have been one of these sites in the cluster. Yeah, otherwise, I wouldn't make that move. So the first step is that this is the cardinality of the cluster. So just how many sites there are in it over L squared. So this is the probability that my seed is chosen in the cluster. Yeah. But then on top of that, I also have to have my random number such that I made all the bonds that I should make in the cluster. So I have to have a product over all links between sites in the cluster. And I should have activated these links. And so the activation probability is 1 minus e to the power minus 2 beta j. So I have a product of a whole bunch of factors of this. So all the activated links should have been activated. Yeah. But I also should have left out all the links that I didn't make. So I also have a product over all x that are in the cluster and y that is not in the cluster. So it is a link that I considered. And the spins, if the spins are aligned, then what's the probability that I do not activate the link between aligned spins?
E to the minus 2 beta j.
That's right. That's simply 1 minus this one. Huh? So it is e to the power minus 2 beta j. So this is a product of a whole bunch of these kind of factors. And then there is also a product over all x in the cluster and y not in the cluster, of which the spins are different. And what's the probability that I did not activate the link between different spins? 1. Yeah. So this is a rather boring contribution. Yeah? It's 1 to the power something high. That is 1. So this is the forward rate. So going from some A to some B. Is this clear? I guess it, yeah, okay. And so now, obviously, I can write down the same expression from B to A, but then I replace all A's by B's and all B's by A. Yeah. And so this is easy for me and harder for you if you want to write down these things, but I care about my time a bit more than about your time. So I'm going to divide by the reverse rate. And so then this again is the same, yeah? So I want to look at the ratio. So this one and this one cancel, yeah? I mean, forward or backward, the cluster is equally large. This term for the reverse move is also exactly the same, because I have to, if I want to go back, I have to make the same cluster, yeah? So that also drops out of the ratio, yeah? This one is boring anyway. It's only once. And so now the part that I miss here is the product of all x in C and y not in C. And so now, to be precise here, I should have added that these are spins in configuration A, right? Because that's a spin. And now here below, I have sigma x b is equal to sigma y in configuration B. Yeah? Okay. And so if one spin is in the cluster and the other one is outside the cluster, and I flip the cluster, then if they were aligned before in B, they are anti-aligned in A, right? So I might as well replace this by saying that sigma xA is not equal to sigma y in A. Yeah, that's the same, right? Because one is in the cluster and is flipped, and the other one is not. Yeah, I didn't do anything now. I did a neutral operation. What I also can do is, if these spins are aligned, then their product is 1, yeah? So I might as well add here sigma x sigma ya. I might add this factor here, because I'm just multiplying by 1. Now, if I want to do the same here, I can also add sigma xa sigma ya, but now they are anti-aligned, so then I have to make a plus out of this, yeah? Because the product is minus 1. So if the spins are anti-aligned, then the product is minus 1. So if I multiply by minus this, then I multiply by 1, which is boring. Yeah? So now I did some mathematical manipulation, which is hard for you to take over in your notes, but okay, yeah, it's easy for me. And so now the next thing is, so if they are aligned in A, I multiply by e to the power minus 2 beta j sigma x sigma y. If they are different, then I divide by e to the power plus this number. Well, that's the same, right? I mean, multiplying by e to the power plus x or dividing by e to the power minus x is the same. So actually, this ratio is going to be the product, of all x in C and y not in C, e to the power minus 2 beta j sigma x a sigma y a. Yeah? Just pure mathematics. And then, this one doesn't move. And then, obviously, if I have the product of all these exponentials, I might as well say this is the exponential of the sum of them. Yeah? So this is actually e to the power minus 2 beta j times the summation of all x in C and y not in C, sigma x a sigma y a. And then you can verify that this is actually e to the power minus beta times the energy difference. Yeah. And so, having derived this, now I can look back at what is my conditional detail balance. So it was here, huh? So this one drops out. Yeah, this was one, and this was one also. If I look at this ratio, then I have to show that it is equal to the ratio of the Boltzmann weights. And that's exactly what I just showed. It's e to the power minus the beta times the energy difference. And so hence, this is a proof of detail balance for this algebra. Yeah, how Svensson and Wang came up is this is a complete mystery to me. But I can prove that they did the right thing. Yeah. This one, yeah.
No, the other one.
The other one.
Yeah, just the last name.
I can move it all the way up. Yeah. So.
Given the probabilities P A and P B for any other system, how easy would it be to develop a similar algorithm?
So you can also it is possible to also use this algorithm and simulate POTS models. Yeah, that has been successful. Also, continuous spin models one has succeeded in doing that, and where then you have a mirror plane in which you flip the spins, and then you can show it. But there are also many cases where you can't. Yeah. And some other cases where you can apply the same thing are unexpected. Yeah? If you have like a simulation of colloids, so of hard spheres, then there is also a cluster algorithm for that. So there are other completely dissociated areas where one was able to also find these kind of algorithms, but obviously there are also many cases where one was not successful, or whether these algorithms were worse numerically in efficiency. So it is worth trying to find them. There's no guarantee for success. Yeah?
So how close does typical size of cluster
So you're mostly interested in the critical temperature, and there you can determine Z, the dynamical critical exponent, and for this algorithm Z is 0.25 numerically.
So that's still the size of the cluster is different from
you know that the clusters that you are going to generate have by construction the typical size of the spin correlation.
In a simulation or in an actual?
In reality. And so now comes a slightly longer answer. Yeah. So the algorithm of Svensson 1 was actually that if you have a system like this, you grow one of these clusters. Yeah. But in Svensson and Wang, you went on growing, covering everything with these kind of clusters. Something like that. And then you randomly assign a spin to each of these clusters. So that's one move of Svensson and Wang. It turns out to be slightly less efficient than Wolf. Because by Wolf, you tend to have slightly bigger clusters, typically. Yeah, the bigger cluster has more sites and is less likely to be the one that you generate. But given this algorithm, you know that you only two spins in different clusters have chance of zero or have zero. The expectation value of the product is zero because you assign random spins. Whereas in the same cluster, they have to be the one. So you know that the spin-spin correlation is just guaranteed to be the linear size of these clusters. It's a four-time Kastelein mapping. Yeah? So this is deep enough, I think. I think I should. Yeah. So you know for sure that this actually is a very efficient way of determining the correlation length. Yeah? Yeah.
So, this is for the critical region, right?
Yeah, that's
You are very far away, like if you're in the ground state, of course.
Yeah.
Cluster algorithm is just going to flip you
from mostly plus to mostly minus to mostly plus to mostly minus. Yeah. Leaving out some spins. Yeah. But then in one cluster move, you're uncorrelated, because the ones that you leave out are random. Yeah. So then it's not worse than Metropolis, because also there you have to attempt in the order of L squared spin flips. So do order L squared operations to have any chance of being decorrelated. So, and then it's, I mean, which one can you implement more efficiently? But that is, yeah. Yeah, so they do
it's
roughly equally well away from critical temperature, and they do much better at critical temperature. Yeah. Okay, so let me just make sure that I wrote my message. Yeah. This is also a nice moment for having the coffee break, I think. Yeah, so we will reconvene at 5 minutes before 10. So the break has been shifted by 10 minutes, as I anticipated. Hope to see you again, and then I will talk about finite size scaling.